This is Paul Hurt and Jennifer Sweeney of Arizona State University speaking with Randy Seaholm in Arvada, Colorado on April 27th. Randy, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Can you start out by telling us your name, your full name, the positions that you've held in the Adaptive Management Program, and the years that you were involved?
Okay. My name is Randy Seaholm. I started working with the Colorado Water Conservation Board on Colorado River issues extensively in 1990. I started participating in the Grand Canyon AMPR in 2000. And I was, I was made the designated TWIG representative on behalf of the state of Colorado in July of 2000. I also served as an alternate member to the AMWIG, and I only had a couple of meetings in that capacity. But I retired in November 2009. Following my retirement, I was retained as a consultant by the state of Colorado to advise them on GCAMP activities, and I remain a TWIG alternate to this day.
To this day. It's amazing to me how much longevity a lot of the members of the AMWIG and TWIG have. There's a lot of people who've been there for decades.
Yep.
And what keeps you motivated to stay involved for so long?
I've always found Colorado River issues just fascinating.
Yeah.
The GCAMP is throwing a couple of monkey wrenches, if you will, into the operations on the Colorado River, which I got to know very well, and we'll go into those as we go along.
yeah, we'll get into those. So the next question is about what aspect of the program you were mostly involved in. There's a lot of people who primarily do scientific research, other people primarily do policy and management type work. What was your main contribution, your main interest?
Okay, I would consider my main responsibilities in policy and management, but I have a technical background in natural resources, so I've crossed the line on occasions, but mostly policy and management.
And what aspect of natural resources is in your background?
I had a degree in watershed science from Colorado State University, so I'm neither an engineer or an attorney, which has served me well.
That's good. Yeah, a lot of people who work in water policy are attorneys.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I've always found it fun to have a good debate with an attorney and come out on top.
So, since this is a history project, we're very interested in change over time. And I wonder now if you can reflect a little bit on what kind of changes, macro or micro level changes, that you've seen in the program over the time that you've participated.
Okay. I guess I've seen the program evolve basically coming right out of the 1995 EIS and the responsibilities that were determined to be that, and that came out in a paper by Scott Loveless. I don't know if you had a chance to read any of the minutes and stuff at all.
Some of the more recent ones, but not all of the old ones.
Let me give you this. This is Scott's paper, and it's in the minutes from January of 2000, and it has a lot of questions that the AMWIG asked for some direction on to see where we can, you know, where we needed to focus our efforts and kind of what the bottom line is. We should be focusing on dam operations and not the existence of the dam. And that was been a hard distinction to keep as we've gone along, and not one that a lot of the environmentalists in particular were interested in trying to abide by.
Can you clarify for us a little bit more the what you mean by that distinction between the operations of the dam versus the dam. Just say a little more about that.
Okay. The existence of the dam caused a number of things to change in the canyon. So it cut off the sediment supply that had come down the river, and it caused a lot of the beaches to become hardened with with river rock and stuff. And that's not something that you can really change through operations of the dam without interjecting additional sediment supply. And with respect to operation of the dam, that is generally operations that I think that you can make that can actually have an impact on the environment of the canyon. So, for example, you can operate the dam in a manner that allows you to conserve the existing sand supply that comes in, put it up on beaches, and that's what a lot of the experiments have aimed at doing, going from beach habitat building flows, which we called them at the outset, to habitat maintenance flows, and as the reservoir dropped, to a variety of different experiments which we're now looking at in the LTEM.
And so you were saying that some interest groups, including the environmentalists, were interested in talking about the existence of the dam. You're suggesting that other interest groups want to have the dam accepted as a de facto reality and talk about operation of the dam only.
Well, in all the documents that you look through, the existence of the dam is a given. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be there, and all the existing laws and everything that impacted operations of the dam were to stay in place. Mm-hmm. So as we go through the adaptive management program, we're looking for operations that can be done within what we refer to as the law of the river, how much water we in the upper basin, or I'd say basically above Glen Canyon, have to make sure that goes down the river to maintain the 10-year running average mm-hmm. flow at Lee Ferry. And so we're keenly interested in that. And then from the standpoint of power generation of all the reservoirs we have above Lee's Ferry, Glen Canyon is the biggest one, provides the most hydroelectric energy and power revenue, and that power revenue is necessary to not only maintain Glen Canyon but all the other primary units of the Colorado River Storage Project, which include Blue Mesa, Navajo, and Flaming Gorge are the primary ones, as well as Glen Canyon. And then we have a number of participating projects that were built with CRSP power revenues.
CRSP is
the Colorado River Storage Project. I will use acronyms, so make me clarify it whenever you have a question.
Yeah, everybody uses acronyms.
But so we have a number of what we call participating projects. The last one that was completed was the Animas La Plata project down there by Durango. So CRSP revenues have to go towards the maintenance of that project, as well as 20-some other projects throughout the Upper Basin. And then, in addition, the power revenues have to serve the Upper Colorado River recovery programs, both the Upper Colorado itself and the San Juan. And it provides the bulk of the money for those endeavors, and then it also contributes money to the Colorado River Salinity Control Program. So we have all these interests in the power revenues, and so we try very hard to make sure that the revenues are maximized like the law calls for, but at least maintained enough to fill your obligations And if you can't do it, then your choice is either cut back or raise power revenue rates. And raising any rate these day and age is not terribly popular.
I was wondering, so you represent the state of Colorado and their water interests, but it sounds a little bit like the hydropower aspect of the water flow is perhaps the most important factor in policymaking.
No, I wouldn't say the most important, but it's probably equally as important. Glen Canyon gives us the flexibility, because it's such a large bucket, to make sure we can maintain the 75 million acre feet past Lee Ferry in any given 10-year period. So it's very important in that aspect, and I'd say water rights probably just a little bit more important, but the power revenues are extremely important as well.
So can you clarify, so in the upper basin states, there's quite a number of them, New Mexico, Wyoming, Colorado, Utah. Can you clarify Colorado's more specific interest in water and hydropower in this program as compared to the other states?
Okay. Colorado gets 51.75% of the depletions that have been allocated to the upper basin, so we have the lion's share of that. And that's probably it is the biggest reason that operations at Glen Canyon and the other reservoirs upstream are the most important. The other three states divvy up the remaining percentages, and New Mexico really has all of their apportionment, consumptive use apportionment, accounted for with their settlement agreement with the Navajo Nation. Utah has plans in place for really